All right, I will call the order of this meeting of the Customer Service Committee. Roll call, please.
Committee Chair Reddick.
Here.
Director Banks. Director Dodson.
Here.
Chair Wolf.
Here.
All right.
Chair Quorum.
I'm sorry?
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Is there any public comment? All right, seeing none. We'll move right into Chairman's report. We will delay or postpone the review of the minutes till the next meeting. Under additional items, we're going to go over the updated customer service work plan. Did have an opportunity to sit in. There were a couple of roundtables that were conducted since we last met, dealing primarily with the fleet issue. And I think we got some good feedback and response that we're going to be able to use going forward. Other than that, without any further ado, I will move right into the rest of the agenda under the Executive Director's portion.
Thank you. I, for my part, am going to immediately turn it over to Sean on my head.
So you
might have to just move over
here,
the chair.
You
but
sure?
Actually, not if Rob's going to advance it.
I can.
Could you please? Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. So as we've...
That's okay.
Typically established, I think we're going to go through the work plan, talk a little bit about some updates on the progress that we're making on our work plan for this committee, and also we hope to get into a little bit more discussion on our fleet policies. As you know, we've been looking very closely at the way we handle fleets in our system. At this point, they're not dealt with that much differently, frankly, than a customer who may have one or two cars. In many cases, fleets will have hundreds, maybe even thousands of vehicles. So we have been taking a real look at, you know, maybe some additional enhancements or other things that we could be doing for our fleet services. I know we had some roundtables and discussions, focus groups with some fleet managers. Then I know we've got some people who will be able to weigh in on, including the chair of this committee, Director Reddick, who went to at least one of those roundtables. So, Shauna, go ahead and take it away.
My pleasure. Good afternoon, everybody.
Hello, Shauna.
Good afternoon.
If we could just advance the first slide. This is a reminder of the work plan that we had put together about a year and a half ago now as a committee. And I'm just going to walk through each piece of this in the subsequent slides to let you know where we stand. We've actually come a long way, and we've completed a number of things, and we've actually come pretty close to advancing down the line to the other things. Oh, is that the advancer? The clicker. So the first item, violations framework, which is on the next page, talks a little bit about the things that are coming up. Here we are, thank you. The 30-day notices are ready for implementation from a technology perspective upon our receipt of JCAR approval. So that's moving from our current notice cycle time frame to a 30-30-30 for first, second, and third level notices. And that is expected to come to us from JCAR in January. You're nodding, David.
You're correct.
Good.
You're
correct. The next item, the settlement guidelines are due for review and another board vote in May. So that's really just kind of queuing all of us up for that discussion. And issuing violation notices for two violations within 6 months. We had gone over this several months back at this point, and then we looked over some survey results from ITAS users, and it seems like everything really supports this concept. It seems like it would be much nicer for a lot of the customers to have more prompt notice, not having to wait 2 years until they violate a third time. That change can take place. That last comment is in the new back office system. It's not something we can program into our current system because of the complexity. But in the new back office system, we will set it up to do that.
What evidence do we assume it will be better for our customers?
The survey results seem to indicate that people didn't feel they were getting notices soon enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the 90-day rule that was implemented a while back brought us pretty far in terms of customer service, but there are still people who are confused as to why didn't they hear from us in 2010.
I think that one of the things that our experience has shown is that although on paper, and as you first take a look at it, when you're offering somebody a two-year grace period, that seems more generous and appreciated. What we've generally found, I think, is that a lot of those actually end up getting an additional violation mm-hmm. within that time frame. And for the ones that where that's more prolonged, it seems to be more of a slap to when you get this notice that says, in 2010 you had a violation, in early 2011, but you recently just had your last one. So now it's come forward. So that was something that was brought forward, and we thought just from the ease of, you know, providing people with prompt information regarding mm-hmm. that, it was something that was generally wanted and desired by the customer. So, you know, we took a look at it to see what kind of changes it would require from an internal system and what would the potential impact would be. And long and short of it, it was something that I think that would be an improvement in customer service down the line. I'm sorry, Sean.
No, I'm just so excited about going up a system that supports this sort of thing.
And I think that is the exciting thing, right? That, you know, if for some reason this is implemented and we find that we're not getting the reactions that we're looking for, that we thought we can come back to all of you and talk about it and make adjustments, you know, it's our hope, more quickly and efficiently in the new system. So,
and we'll keep our eye on it to make sure, of course, that it is serving the customers as we had hoped, and not changing any of our other numbers in a way that we're able.
Thank you.
The next item has to do with feedback transponders. I feel like I get the same update on this time and again, and I'm so sorry. I know this is an excruciatingly slow process, but it's true kind of nationwide right now that everybody who's trying to figure out how to replace their lane equipment is facing the same thing. The lane equipment is being generated a little slower than normal because everybody's trying to figure out the national interoperability impacts. So we do have the new lane controller that we would need to test, a prototype of it. And we expect that feedback transponder prototype to arrive at our doorstep any day, and we will do all of our own testing. The EasyPass group is doing additional testing as well. And assuming that everything turns out just fine, we will have the opportunity at that point to make the decision to place an order and do the replacement system-wide. Our equipment, I think, as we've discussed in the past, is end of life. So it's not as if we're, our current equipment is end of life, so it's not as if we're wasting money by buying new equipment just to get feedback transponders. We have to do this anyway. So let's do it in a way that gives us additional customer service capability.
And Shauna, as we, you're talking about early 2014 to begin this testing, and what kind of time frame do we think, assuming that the testing goes well and we don't have any issues with it, that we would be moving forward then with the procurement for that those changes?
My instinct is it wouldn't be until a little bit later in 2015. Okay. Just knowing how the testing conversations typically go in the EasyPass group, and then knowing what the manufacturing timelines sometimes look like. But if we ever have reason to be more optimistic, it's certainly.
Thank you.
And then from a fleet perspective, which is what we'll mostly discuss in the next several slides, there are a few things that have happened very recently. We had two of those roundtable discussions that Christy referenced, and we had 21 participants across 18 different fleet organizations, and then we also have just released surveys trying to understand to fleets directly and to other tolling organizations, trying to understand what the experiences are on both sides and what there might be out there that we haven't tried or done ourselves yet. And then we get into a little bit of the fleet information. And Director Reddick, I don't know if you want to talk a little bit at this point about those roundtable discussions, or if you want to save that just for one more slide.
Well, you know, there's a couple of comments that I want to make, and for Chairman and Director Dotson, I think the response that we got, I thought, was a really good one. Now, I only attended the one that was here in early December on the 11th, but we had a very well represented group. I thought we had kind of a broad representation between car dealerships, trucking companies, and rental. Large rental car companies. And overwhelmingly, I think that one of the things that they were looking for, or ultimately what they indicated that would be of great assistance to them, was just simply giving them the capabilities to allow them to manage their own fleets better, to do a lot of the information, right, compiling and controlling of their own vehicles, because they have so many and there's various users and they're moving things back and forth, which I thought, you know, kind of went to some of the things that we had talked about here in this committee and kind of had thought going in the past. That being said, they offered up, I mean, there were some anecdotal stories. I think with the amount of cars and transponders, or automobiles and transponders that were there, you're going to have a few anecdotal stories about things that, you know, went awry. And most of those we've, you know, in following up with staff, we've been able to check in and identify, and they weren't that out of the ordinary or as peculiar as perhaps we thought, and I think we've gotten to the bottom of those. But overwhelmingly, the thing that I think was most impressive is all of these companies deal with multiple tolling agencies throughout the United States. And the thing that I think everybody almost to a person said as part of the discussion was is that this tolling agency was the best that they had dealt with. You know, reaching out, having those conversations, trying to work with them.
Do you think they say that to all the girls?
I don't like to think so. Don't pop my balloon. But I thought it went, and I thought there was a very open discussion.
People being shy about criticizing our operations.
Well, thank you.
No, so that being said, I thought that was a positive that we took away, and then in talking with staff afterwards, I think we've got some ideas moving forward, and I know Tim's just ready to jump out of the gate and do some of these things, so that's all I have. I probably will jump in again in some place else and cut everybody off. But.
Just a quick question. I just want to make sure I understand this slide, just for clarification.
Which we, yeah.
So it appears that these fleets have a bunch of trucks, and there are only so many transponders that they're able to distribute amongst their employees, and does that mean so then the ones that don't have the transponders, it's just the whole process of trying to identify?
It's the video tolling.
It's the video tolling.
We think there are probably a couple things going on. We think that a lot of these fleets organizations don't remove plates even when they get rid of vehicles, license plates. So we think that there's just this growing number of license plates that the transponders keep getting circulated amongst the vehicles. Mm-hmm. We think that some of them are not very good at inventory management overall, and that they probably haven't ordered enough transponders. So it is something.
Because we don't withhold transponders, right?
Goodness
and,
no.
Yeah, so right. If they should have a transponder for every.
They should.
They can have as many as they want.
Right.
They should have one for each. So this says.
They should have one always in a vehicle that's traveling.
Right.
Okay. You can have more than one license plate on one transponder, but. You know, then the onus is on you to make sure that that transponder is in whichever vehicle is driving on the system, and probably an easier thing to do if you have, you know, you and a spouse's car or two cars in your family versus hundreds of fleet vehicles.
But Sean, on your slide, the account number.
Transponders.
The number of active transponders in there, but when you say 6,300 accounts, you really mean companies
that have 10 to 25 active transponders. So there are 6,300 accounts,
correct?
Different companies
that
have 10 to 25 active transponders that fall within these different categories.
Okay.
Right, no, not 6,300 vehicles sharing 10 to 25.
Okay, that's what it
transponders.
I want to clarify that.
But your point is still valid, because that does come up. You can see a mismatch of plates and transponders, and the bigger the account, sometimes the bigger the mismatch, because, we're pretty sure they're not
moving the plates. Okay.
Why wouldn't it just be easier for them to get a transponder for every vehicle and put it on the machine?
I think if their fleet is geographically centralized, it is pretty easy. I think it gets much harder for them when they have a fleet that's stretched coast to coast with multiple contract drivers. And especially the intermodal stuff, I think, complicates things.
But there are entities that have sprung up, right? Third party or intermediary entities.
Like rent-a-toll plate pass. That do try to help normalize that.
Because for some reason, the fleet, the companies that have these fleets, some of them do have difficulty with it. It's not clear why. As soon as you place the order for the new vehicle, right, put it, you know,
put a new plate, license plate on something, that you would just take care of it all at once. But for whatever, for probably a variety of reasons, some of them struggle with that.
And does that cause undue work on our folks who come to, is it, or the people we kind of, that we use to read those?
Anyone who travels without a transponder does require us to video toll. And so that is more work and more cost on our end. And it is something to consider, you know, moving forward, because we will, you know, we'll continue to grow. We're opening new roads. We should think about these policies.
And do you work with the intermediaries?
We do. We work with them relatively closely. They are helpful. They actually help the rental car agencies a great deal, and then a number of the trucking agencies. The organizations that I've seen do pretty sophisticated inventory management with respect to their transponders is FedEx and UPS, which probably isn't surprising. They have both divided their accounts by region, and then they really hold their regional manager accountable, and they do a great job keeping on top of all of it and being in touch with us. That is a little less true for some of the, I'd say, more old-fashioned trucking organizations.
But I'm thinking about the, maybe you had already answered the question and then went on to talk about UPS and FedEx. I'm talking about these organizations that have sprung up.
Right.
I'm thinking in terms of policy, should we be thinking about driving more of the accounts to these intermediaries, or is it better for us to try to figure out how we deal with them directly ourselves?
I think it does help us. The intermediaries do help us, and I think to the extent that we can collaborate with the intermediaries and make their jobs even easier, it will be much easier for them to get customers.
Mm-hmm.
If their jobs with us are difficult, and sometimes they are, you know, sometimes they have a hard time collecting the violation notices from their own customers and then getting them to us and having us work through the process. If there are ways that we can make that easier, then there will be a big value add for customers to join them and just take
some work out of our customer service operation.
Mm-hmm. And out of their own.
I was under the impression that, based on what you just said, Director Reddick, about the, you know, the favorable interaction with our folks, that there was supposed to be some congruity about with other tollways to where, and I know, you know, to kind of synchronize the process along the way, and I don't know if you, how that, you do have those discussions with other agencies to try to the degree that we can, have some type of systemic process.
For fleets
throughout.
You know, the interoperability discussion with the other toll agencies, and it is something that I've advocated for in those discussions. I'm on the board of the IBTTA, which is the kind of national association that's doing a lot of work with interoperability. And then we are a member of the Easy Pass group, which is this coalition of multiple states. But you know, this time, all the interoperability discussions have been more about just making sure that the technology and accounts can be accessed by everyone in the group. So similar technology so that your transponder will work on multiple systems, and also, you know, rules about how the different agency partners get paid when an IPASS account holder, for instance, drives in New Jersey. But it's been less about kind of what the business rules or customer service practices.
Sure.
Each agency has really developed their own. So it's a point that we've made, but right now, honestly, the discussion is much more focused on this.
Which makes sense.
Other side.
That makes sense.
It makes sense. I think it would be good if we could better coordinate those things, because that's part of the customer experience, right? That's how they experience interoperability. So, you know, sometimes we do get complaints from people who are used to driving on a toll road in another state with different ways of handling violations. You know, and they think that they will get an invoice when they drive. They don't, you know, either see or choose not to see the 7-day to pay sign on the side or what have you. So, you know, there's every once in a while, you know, those things do happen. So I do think that's probably the next phase of interoperability. But right now, people are really focused on, you know, technologies being compatible and just the exchange of, you know, funds, basically.
One thing that might be relevant to that type of thinking, though, is the fact that Rent-A-Toll and PlatePass and those intermediaries deal with all the toll agencies. So that is one of the big value adds they offer their customers that have national fleets.
So can we assume that any improvement that we do in our own fleet practices will ultimately benefit those intermediary groups as well?
And they were represented, Tim, maybe you can remind me, some of them were represented at those roundtables.
Yeah.
So they don't see our being more efficient as competition to them. It's actually helpful
for
them?
No, it would be so helpful to them.
The same efficiencies that would help them in their process would also, should a company choose not to engage mm-hmm. that and mm-hmm. want to do it on their, would also be more, would make it easier for an individual company as well.
Yeah, no, I understand that. I just thought if we were excruciatingly efficient, then nobody would have to use the intermediary. No danger of that.
Well, I suppose if they were only, if these fleets were only traveling on the Illinois system, mm-hmm. but I think often
it's
the
really
benefit
the
is that the multiple jurisdictions and just dealing with, right?
Right.
I mean,
oh,
that's
yeah.
one of the issues that you don't have to, as a company, you don't have to be as concerned about that. But
mm-hmm. And PlatePath offers not just tolling, but also something having to do with the weight management of the freight. Mm-hmm. And so the service is
like overweight permits and those
like a pre-approval mm-hmm. for a number of the trucks that they get from all the different EasyPass states.
So maybe though it's a good point, and we'll make note of it, that you know maybe focusing more intently on what specifically we could do for those third-party intermediaries, you know, is something that, you know, if there are specific things that will in particular help those groups, that could take a lot of burden off of our customer mm-hmm. service operation potentially.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I would concur.
Yeah.
And the other part of this slide that we have up there is just kind of a reminder about some of the unique, just continuing the conversation, some of the unique things that fleets do experience, which is they just have huge volumes that complicate everything they do. It's one thing if an average family or household gets a violation notice or a notification that their account balance is low. But that becomes a lot more complex when you're dealing with multiple offices and everything else. And then they do worry about the fact that our notices go to office locations that are not ideal for them, that that's what they registered their vehicles to, things like that. And they find it very hard to have multiple office managers, fleet managers, whomever it may be, access the IPAS account, because we have a number of security points they have to kind of get through, and it's really just one or two people for a whole national fleet, and they would like it to be a little easier. But that's kind of the point of self-service. If we could just improve the self-service options, we'd get them much better. So the next slide really just kind of asks these questions about what are some of the things we could do. The focus on intermediaries is a great one. What are some of the things we could do or should do for our fleet customers? And some of the follow-up questions around that.
What else did we hear from the fleet roundtable specifically? Maybe that would help guide some of the discussion. So what were some of the specific points of feedback from the roundtable? We talked a little bit about some type of account management that would be easier for multiple people to access.
I think the other point that I heard a couple of different times was seeking designated contact points. And just so that everybody's on the same page, designated contacts within our organization, people that were familiar with the issues that had been raised there so that they could pick back up with the same person and be there, kind of a
an account representative or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that came forward a number of times.
And I think what they did say is one of the things that they liked about, at least what I picked up, one of the things they liked about the Illinois Tollway is that our customer service function on the call center side and here kind of in person at the tollway is full of people who really will go out of their way to call them back or help them figure out a difficult problem rather than just brush them off or not even be accessible by phone. So a number of them indicated that they had found people over the years that they'll call back over and over again, and our team members just keep taking the calls and helping, which is lovely. That is a great customer service, but it's hardly streamlined and probably not as efficient or structured as it could be.
I guess my only comment would be just without having some of that data in front of you, I just went back to the previous slide. I'm just a big believer in, you know, controlling what we control, what we can control. And it just looks like, I mean, the only two that kind of stick out are the ones that say violations that sometimes are sent to drivers instead of the organization, and violations sometimes sent to different office locations. So to the degree that you can get good data and information about that part of it, I think that's something.
And how could we, you know, what are some things that we could do? Because clearly, you know, if you look up a plate and the plate lookup systems that we have, we go to the, you know, DMV or whatever entity for that particular state, and there's a registered owner, and sometimes it's the individual, or sometimes it's, is there anything more that we could do in that regard, or is that one of the questions on the survey that we're sending out, or what do we think on that front?
Well, I guess, and just to be clear, that the problem that was kind of voiced, at least in that I heard, was they understand that that's where it's been registered. The question is, there's a lot of checks and balances that they need to go through, because mm-hmm. it needs to go through both their corporate headquarters potentially and then the regional distribution area or wherever they're operating out of. So one of the things they got to is, under the current structure of from timeline to when they received the notice to when action was required, was it was a condensed period of time. So once we get through JCAR and we switch to the 30-30-30, there will be, they'll still be going to different areas, but a lot of the internal pressures that they're facing are time-based, so that will be,
it'll have time immediate. To route to the correct office or correct location.
It doesn't get past the fact that it's not sent to someplace that perhaps maybe they would want, but it, I think it eliminates a lot of that stress. So that's kind of what I heard when they were talking about that.
I would concur.
So it sounds like a lot of this, the impetus is on them to kind of do a lot of their own internal kind of operations and logistics about some things. So I'm just thinking out loud here. If there was a way to come up with like a quick, fast sheet, you know, kind of like a frequently asked questions that you could maybe send out and say, hey, if you have this problem, then this. I'm just thinking out loud that in terms of solutions.
Yeah.
Is there some fast, quick facts that you could send out to them and say, hey, here are the number one problems, and here's what we found are successful in solving some of them.
Okay.
Just an idea.
That's a good, so we can kind of refine some of those to be even more targeted to fleets and some of the issues that were raised in these focus groups, essentially. What about reverse lookup? You know, so, you know, ABC Trucking, how do they just have to have all of their plate numbers to provide to get any information on missed tolls or violations, or would it be possible for them to at some point have a system where they could just type in ABC Trucking and get everything that we have on file for ABC Trucking? Is that something that would be possible at some point in the future, maybe?
I think with the new system, it is something that could be possible, and probably in a couple ways. The license plate would be the easiest thing to have people look up, and then we could probably introduce at some point that wildcard name search as well.
And again, it might not be perfect.
Right, it might not be perfect, and we would have to have disclaimers, and we have to have them understand that it doesn't replace C, the thing on screen doesn't replace the notice, but it gives them a forewarning or information if something didn't get routed to them, so they can proactively reach out mm-hmm. to us and deal with something before the collection agency is an area.
Shared ownership. Absolutely.
So I guess I should follow this earlier. Are these numbers on slide 6 the accounts that are our accounts only, Illinois accounts only?
These are IPAS accounts.
And do we know what the experience is for the similar kinds of companies whose transponders come from a different jurisdiction? Like if you have a Easy Pass.
I think, from what I understand, and Tim, I'll ask you to jump in.